Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
This show transformed television. It inspired young artists and captivated audiences across the country. This show has motivated millions of young Americans to love, often and with enthusiasm.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 112 for the week of April 11th, 2016. I am carefully positioned soda, David T. Cole, and I am here with former co-host, now trivia question, Sarah D. Bunting.
Free the dunk.
Three-headed diva, Joe Reed.
Y'all should have won.
Forgotten season 6 contestant, Tara Ariano.
I came in 9th.
And rude yet honest observation, Stephanie Kangro.
You just don't look like an American Idol.
Hello, everybody, and please welcome to EHG 112, our fine feathered American Idol coverer, Stephanie Kangro.
Yay! Welcome back.
We actually
have a bunch of
idol ears on the show today. I covered season 13 somehow. That was the Caleb season on previously.tv, and back in the BC era, Joe Reed covered it for Television Without Pity.
Indeed.
So now that the show has ended forever, I thought we could talk a little bit about the season just passed first and then talk about the franchise as a whole. So Stephanie, what'd you think of the last season separate from the farewell Michigas?
I think that's been established. It's gone downhill for a while. None of the talent has ever really been quote unquote, you know, ready for it or good enough for it for the last about 5 seasons or so. Some are adorable, and Lee Jean, who I just wanted to give a hug and ice cream and like a teddy bear to, you know, he's adorable. He should be an American Idol, but in like 5 or 10 years when he's not 15 and can sing on pitch because his voice isn't cracking. There's that end of the spectrum where kids who just really want it but haven't really put in any work. And then there's the other end where they've been coached their whole lives, like Olivia Rocks for it, which is just kind of nauseating to watch. No one wants to watch that perfectly poised person kind of quote-unquote discover themselves as an artist, because all they discover is like Hot Topic and like, you know, pairs of fingerless gloves and stuff. Like no one needs to see that anymore. So the past season, not the best. It hasn't really been the best. Though the two who did go out on top, Trent and LaPortia, arguably not the best, not the correct order of winners there, but you know, they are good singers. They're good vocalists. They deserve whatever, you know, hopefully good things are coming to them. So mixed bag, but overall not that great.
And how was the goodbye aspect? I meant to watch it sort of to whatever, witness history passing / show solidarity with you. And then I just couldn't care. And we paid you to care and you cared wonderfully. So was that really like intrusive, or was it, did you feel prepared for it?
I wish it was more. In a sense.
That's sort of how I felt too, actually.
Right. Okay, good. Like I felt one, the season 10 contestants, as much as, you know, they weren't that great, kind of got the shaft because they weren't really seen anywhere in the grand finale. You know, there wasn't any moment with just like even the top 10 of the final season, of them doing anything together. I think I caught like a couple of them in the background numbers. I thought there were too many kind of large medley numbers with random idols of the past that I didn't really need to see again, other than like, you know, maybe seeing an audience with like, you know, their name popping up underneath them so you were reminded of who they are. Sanjay was in the audience. I was perfectly happy to see him there. Yeah. There was one kind of montage of just like funny clips and moments of like the original judges kind of goofing off and, you know, Paula being Paula and Ryan hanging out with Dunkelman. And that was kind of the cool stuff that bought back like that sentimentality that I wish there was more of that. Dunkelman does show up. I don't want to spoil it if anyone's like DVR'd this and is like desperate to go catch it, but Dunkelman's there, made me really, really happy. And I enjoyed how they played off him. I enjoyed how they played off the final kind of moments with Simon, because he shows up. But other than
he
that,
looks good.
It does, and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, he looks good. He looks better than he's looked. I would.
Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah.
He's like.
I always would have though. It's I don't know what it is.
He's like relaxed now. He's got like the dad thing going for him. I agree. He does look good. I don't know if I would, but he looks good.
I kind of like.
I feel like all the original judges. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, as someone who didn't watch this season and has never really watched the show much, I thought the finale was really fun. I enjoyed the medleys. That was the only thing that made me kind of really pay attention in the 3 hours that we had to sort of mainline prepare for the podcast. And I thought the song choices were fun. Although I will say, I just wish someone on the show, and maybe they did, has ever given anyone the note of like, you can cool it on the melisma. Like, you don't need to prove you know all the notes on every song.
Harry has tried, I feel.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think at this point he was just like, I have got somewhere else to be.
Yeah.
I will find somewhere else to be. They gave me this talk show so that I could leave.
Well, and it's like there's something about stepping on that American Idol stage that just makes them go into like hyper competitive mode, and like that's their chosen mode of competition is just like, I am going to outsing you by doing this, by singing more than you.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of the way it goes. Yeah, I agree with you though. I feel like the medleys were well chosen and seemed to have a sense that whoever was producing the show had a good sense of why people who liked American Idol liked American Idol and were smart about things. Like they let like the season 3 diva trio like perform together, the Jennifer Hudson, Fantasia Barrino, Latoya London thing, where they're like, we know this is why you liked this season. It was because of these three. They even sort of had a little bit of sense of humor about letting all the white guys with guitars who won their seasons like all perform together in this weird like Nashville lineup where they were all just like there with their guitars like lined up side by side. It's very funny.
It was a David Bowie tribute, which was the weirdest
part.
That
was an odd thing. That was definitely an odd thing. And I know people were like all pissed off that like, why isn't Adam Lambert there? And then somebody I saw on Twitter being like, he's rehearsing for Rocky Horror. And they were like, oh, I guess fine.
When they got to the end of that, the end of the David Bowie tribute, I turned to Dave and was like, how do you not end that on Heroes? And then belatedly thought, oh, you can't have these American Idols sing We Could Be Heroes just for one day when one of them is Lee DeWise. Like, these people that history is just like the waters have closed over them. Yeah, okay, maybe not the best choice to end on. Sorry, Sarah.
Oh, that's all right. I sort of, like, I watched that American Dream thing, which was also like, that was like the real, for those of you who are still watching it for the competition, which who is that even? That was the like look back at how far we've come as a nation, uh-huh, thanks to Idol or whatever. And then right. Kelly Clarkson in that weird jeans dress thing. But I'm really glad I watched it because it really like the world that we sort of operate in as commentators on culture has really changed so much in just that amount of time. And like, I was just remembering how Tara and I viewed this show, or maybe Tara didn't, but I viewed the show almost completely through a lens of how annoying the fan bases were on the forums. That it was like, oh, season 2, Claymates. I'm sure that wasn't his fault, but
I still sneer at Elliot Yameen because his fans were the most annoying fans that season.
Oh my God.
That fucking guy who seems like a normal, nice little, you know, tiny little person.
What was
like,
it we used to call him?
I don't know. Something terrible.
Fetal alcohol Scott Grimes. Something like that. Maybe that was just me.
Yeah.
God, ready as a lightning bolt. But like the Soul Patrol. Like there were so many people that it was like, I started out rooting for that guy and for Caleb.
Sure.
And then it was just like, oh, I can't.
The people like Taylor Hicks and like Sanjaya made me so sort of like sad and reflective, though, in that those people are so cemented into that moment in time for them where like like Taylor Hicks cannot go anywhere without a harmonica just in case like he's called upon to give some kind of performance. And he's always got to be that mm-hmm. exact guy. Now Sanjaya shows up to the finale wearing, I think that was a wig, right? The pony hawk thing that he was wearing. Like,
yeah,
I would hope so. But like, that's just like, you are always going to be that exact boy that you were when you were, he was what, 17? Like, how horrible, like how awful for that kid. Jesus Lord.
And yet, you know who came across very well in that finale, I thought, was Justin Guarini. He was like, he looked good too. Yeah. And his duet with that girl was like kind of hot. They were good together. I wish good things for him. He's also funny on Twitter. And in his Dr.
Pepper, I think finishing number two in some of these seasons is like, either you're going to do way better.
Yeah.
Lambert. Or, I mean, who was the winner
of Lambert season?
Chris
Allen, who's still so cute. I don't care.
Yeah, that's fine. He's adorable.
I'm still so fine with that.
I'd happily be a sandwich with those two. And I love Lambert. I love that he did all that work with Donor's Choose.
Yeah.
And was just like, oh, who, me? Like, I don't know. He's awesome.
Yeah.
But I think finishing number two, or like it sort of heightens whoever you are, and some of them handle it really well and push off from it. And others are like, they're just going to be singing that same footnote forever because they just don't have the capacity to get out of it, which I think is like, I don't know, the way the show controlled the way we think about TV and competition and the music industry is pretty amazing, especially from this like vantage point where it hasn't done that for a while.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot some of these judges after the
like
the dark time of Minaj v
Mariah.
Yeah, like I never watched that era, but oh my god, so uncomfortable.
Also, here's what I will say, that show, if that show did one thing to sell me, it sold me on I want to go see J-Lo's Vegas show now, because that looks like the craziest. She just looks like she's having so much fun. Like, I'm really, really into the idea of seeing that now, because I don't know, that was a super fun thing for me.
I want to see a reality show about Keith Urban, because the way his mind works is like, I don't get it at all. Especially the hair. But he's also so like charming and sweet, and somehow has managed to remain married to Nicole Kidman. So
should we be alarmed that it closed out on Ryan's voice, not even his face, being like, goodbye, America. For now.
Well, like, I noticed during the show that they actually never really said like the last this or the last that. It was always this season, at least when I was paying attention.
Yeah.
So I think Simon intentionally left themselves, that door open.
Sure.
Huh.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Simon Fuller has been pretty open, I think, to the press that he's gotten surrounding this quote unquote farewell, that he intends to reboot and bring this back once he can figure out like some new metrics or however he wants to kind of, you know, pitch it in terms of a competition with, you know, he wants interactive elements. Not sure what they would be, but that's, you know, the buzzword he's throwing around there.
Cyber.
So cool. So it's coming back in like one or two seasons. And my only hope is that Duncan gets to host it. I haven't given up on Dunkelman. I really haven't.
I mean, he looks exactly the same.
He does.
Like, he has not aged a day either. Like,
he has not.
That was a two-person pact with the devil the day that that show started. Like,
I would have said that, like, there's no point rebooting American Idol because TV has changed so much. Like, there just aren't those sensation shows anymore that every single person watches. But The Voice does well enough, which Stephanie also covers for us at Previously Done.
Yeah, I was going to ask Stephanie about that, like, what she thought of The Voice's role in the demise of American Idol, or whether you think it's just, like, one has nothing to do with the other.
I don't think one has anything to do with the other, because, I mean, The Voice, it's been 10 seasons so far, but only like 5 years. And if you look at the last 5 years of Idol, that's kind of when the talent has gone downhill a little bit, which I feel some of it's gone to The Voice, but you can't really blame that. I think you really just need to get rid of the stupid auditions, make it pretty clear that these producers are like scouting the talent on YouTube. They're inviting the people to perform, make it kind of obvious, get people to vote around that, you know, go on their YouTube page, whoever has the most YouTube subscribers, or I don't even care how they do it. Make it overt though that they're kind of picking and choosing these people for you to vote on and declare your new idol or whoever, you know, make up the fan base for. But I think, you know, Idol really went downhill when they stopped kind of progressing. Like, Ryan Seacrest you know, he taught America how to text at some point so we could vote. But then Twitter took over and they didn't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah. Hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah. I'll also say about this particular final two, because my least, I was, when they got to the point where they were going to announce the winner, I was just like, should I even be watching this? Cause like I super didn't care. And yet it was funny to watch it on Twitter where it was like, you know, this kind of like big voiced diva versus this milk toasty guy. And I was like, God, Twitter's going to be so predictable about this. And they totally were, where they were just like, ah, the white guy won again. What a dweeb. And it's like, yeah, he's a total dweeb. And yet this week we find out that LaPortia goes on in the media, does not agree with the homosexual lifestyle. And I was like, that is what you get, Twitter, for jumping on somebody that you don't even know. So congratulations.
She was a better singer, but yeah, that is.
She was
no
a
really
better singer, but like,
I don't want to defend her, but she hasn't been media trained, and I do think, I will say, Borchetta might have it out for her. So I'm not going to defend what she said because it's not defensible, but maybe I will think maybe she was pushed out there a little, you know, unpolished, because Borchetta kind of just wants to push that country angle on Trent and kind of win over people to his side.
Fair enough.
Hmm.
I have one other thought to add to my one thought earlier, which is this. Who was the country singer who looked like a baby but had a voice like this?
Scotty McCreary.
I cannot believe that voice belongs to that Opie-looking
That's exactly what Dave
minor
said.
Child motherfucker.
He does not have an expression on his face that is not excessively leering, by the way. It is so... bothersome to me.
So here's
guy.
My.
It's like Eddie Redmayne in Twitty City had a kid.
Yes.
Here's my pitch. That guy singing country songs, but all about stuff for millennials. Like, do you remember Pokemon? Gotta catch 'em all.
That would do really well.
It would. Somewhere the Borch just got a Woody and was like, yep.
Hey, at the very least, he could turn that into a pretty good YouTube channel, I bet.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
I got nothing else to say about Idol, I have to say. I enjoyed watching that finale, though. I thought it was a nice capper, and it actually made me look up for my coloring and pay attention, which almost nothing does, especially since this was a Kate Middleton coloring book. So whatever. Congratulations, Idol. You got me.
Any other last thoughts before we move on?
Nope. Good luck, Dunk.
All right. Thanks, American Idol. We'll see you in a couple years.
Yep.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching Season 10, Episode 13 of Face Off.
Mm-hmm. What's a cliffhanger?
When they make something super exciting at the end of the episode, but they don't tell you what's going to happen, so that you really want to watch the next episode.
Like, for example, how we watch My Little Pony, as it leaves it on a cliffhanger, usually when the problem starts hatching. It's really cool.
My Little Pony is awesome.
So if you don't watch it, get in there. Yes.
Do you know what that means?
They're really...
She was asking what possessed is.
Into it?
So in this case, when they are talking about possessed, they're saying that the person who is possessed, their body and their mind is being taken over by someone else.
Creepy.
So do you think that Rob should follow all of the advice that the director gives?
I think no, because he still has his own imagination. He isn't possessed.
Oh, good use of a word you just learned.
What's Project Greenlight?
It's a show for directors. People who want to be a director on TV or movies.
Okay. That would be 3 pure hours of watching television.
It sounds good to me.
Me too. Get the popcorn ready.
What's the scariest movie you've ever seen?
I was pretty scared for Cloudy and the Chance of Meatballs 2 when I saw it.
So for next week, who do you want to be the winner?
Are you asking because of the work or because of the money?
How about both? Who do you think has the best work?
Walter?
And if you had to give $100,000 to Rob, Melissa, or Walter, who would you give $100,000 to?
I wouldn't give it to anyone. I would use that money for myself.
On what?
Atta girl.
On stuff.
Okay, but if you had to give the money...
Like I had no choice?
Keeping it is not an option.
Who would force me to give money?
It's a game.
I laugh.
Ooh.
Cliffhanger. We never find out who she would give the money to.
I think Liv had a lot of sugar that day because when the file came to you, it was like 12 minutes long. So I just cut it up into just weird little bits. So stuff happened on Face Off. It's not over yet.
No, it was the middle of the finale. So no one got it, won or lost.
Hey, everybody. It's time to talk about Fort Awesome Hawaii. That is Dave and Tara's vacation rental here on the Big Island. If you're thinking of getting away from that terrible cold April weather, here's your chance. Go to fortawesomehawaii.com, see all our pictures, read about all the stuff you can do around here, some boogie boarding, some snorkeling. You know we got a TV in every room in that
snorkeling
rental, you know, and 55-inch TV. We know how to vacation. You know how to vacation. That's how we do it.
You can book it through VRBO, through Airbnb, through Flipkey. It's $95 a night, and it's a fully furnished one-bedroom cottage right here, about an hour outside of Kona.
It's a prime Gordon Lightfoot meeting opportunity.
For sure.
And we're close to all the good stuff. Now, our current guest, Tucker, is here with us right now. Hello, Tucker.
Hi.
So Tucker comes to our place, and he says, hello, I'm so glad to be here. Guys, I got some delicious beef jerky for you. And Tara immediately says, Tara.
Don't make me say it again.
Tara says, maybe the dog would like it. And then Tucker's like, what the fuck, guys? Unbeknownst to us, we thought Tucker was offering us a Slim Jim he just picked up at the store. And, you know, but that's not what we're talking about.
No,
what we're talking about, as we found out moments later,
yes,
to our shock.
And hideous embarrassment.
Hideous embarrassment was.
On my part.
We're talking about some grade A jerky products. We're talking about stuff that you cannot feed a dog because the dog's not worthy. Now, Tara's not a jerky person. As I would,
well
she's not a beef jerky person, let's put it
normally
that way. But she sampled it, and Tara?
Well, the first thing I said was, no, we can't give this to the dog. It was too good for the dog.
So
it's delicious.
We were so embarrassed, we said, Tucker, we got to clear our good name in your eyes. Come on the podcast, tell people about your product. Tucker, take it away.
Hi, Extra Hot Graders. This is Tucker from Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. Since 2013, we've been making beef jerky that's superior to your typical truck stop fare. Our jerky comes from 100% all-natural grass-fed Rosetta beef that give it high-quality flavor and texture. No artificial ingredients, no antibiotics, no added hormones ever. We make delicious flavors like OG Hickory, Chipotle Guavera, Habanero Escobar, and Victorious B.I.G., a collaboration with Victory Brewing's Storm King Imperial Stout. Speaking of breweries, if you have one, or a fine foods market, give Righteous Felon a shot. We do free shipping on all wholesale orders. We also make a great addition to gift baskets at events like film festivals or weddings. Finally, if you're just looking to satisfy your insatiable jerky craving, visit us online at righteousfelon.com. Right now, Extra Hot Great listeners can use the discount code EXTRA15 and get 15% off their first order. Again, the website is righteousfelon.com, and the discount code is EXTRA15. Now back to the greatest thing in your podcast library, Extra Hot Grape. Thanks, Tara and Dave.
Thank you so much, Tucker. Everyone should do that. This is superior jerky for sure.
It is time to go around the dial, and our first stop is with Tara.
Still so embarrassed by that story.
You should be.
I am.
I was mortified. I was like, what the fuck?
You're a jerky.
I just thought he was, well, whatever. We explained it in the thing. They were very
forgiveness,
sweet.
Please.
Thank you, Tucker, for coming.
That's how buddy. Tucker got a free night at Fort Awesome.
Yes, indeed. Moving on forever. I wanted to talk about togetherness as we record this on Sunday. By the time you hear this, the series finale of Togetherness on HBO will have aired. I wrote about this a little bit, which you can see on previously.tv in my season in review post. But this is like such a huge drop off from a show I really loved in season one to all the stuff that happened in season two that was so annoying. I mean, season one was always sort of about characters who have not figured out life and are screwing things up and not relating to each other well and a lot of misconnections and stuff. But like season two just amped it all up. There was a separation and then we had to see the married couple separately and neither event ended up looking better. And there's this whole storyline with the Tina character, the Amanda P character, who my favorite. I feel like she has not, you know, struck a single wrong note in her performance, which I will defend until I die. She is perfect. However, what they've done to the Tina character in season two is so bad that all of a sudden, because she's helping Michelle out with a baby while Michelle is separated from her husband, she suddenly decides she wants a baby, which, whatever, I get it. This happens even to people who are in their late 30s, assuming that Tina is, you know, younger than Amanda Pete. But like the idea that this is going to solve Tina as a character and as a person and sort of straighten her out from like all of the things she was doing wrong in season one is gross. I won't go so far as to say it's misogynistic, but it certainly left a bad taste in my mouth and it was like a real betrayal of the character I had always loved the most. So I said at the end of season one, that finale, the way it ended, would have been like such a perfect way to stop a limited run series. And now that season two has happened, even though, you know, I watched every episode and was happy to do it mostly, I still think like they should have ended it after season one, because I don't think season two really deepened what we knew about any of these characters in a way that was good. So although I'm disappointed for all the people in it, I think it's probably a good thing that it is ending. Joe, you watched it too, right?
Yeah, although I'm a few episodes behind, so okay. I feel like I don't have great things to look forward to. No, that's okay. Thank you for the warning. I got through, I think, 4 episodes of the new season and am looking to finish up soon. Probably not by tonight, but yes.
Yeah, so that's a bummer. And my plug is for my particles on previously.tv for The Americans. My new favorite thing this season, season 4, is to do meme pictures over all the shots of Martha trying to look normal because she never is. She has no chill and she's hilarious to me. And please check out my posts because they make me laugh.
Stephanie.
Okay, so this week, CBS announced that they are going to do an anthology crime series, with the first topic being the JonBenet Ramsey murder this fall to coincide with the 20th anniversary. I typically haven't been super into these kind of, you know, true crime kind of stories that are going on. I didn't think Making a Murderer was that great of a show. Controversial opinion, I know. The OJ show I thought was good. The Ryan Murphy version, I'm not into kind of all of these OJ's innocence kind of things that are coming out like after it. I think it's kind of too much. But the JonBenet one, I'm actually really excited about. To recap the case, she was a 6-year-old beauty pageant queen found dead in her very wealthy Boulder, Colorado home either Christmas morning or the day after Christmas morning, I forget, in 1996. Her parents and brother were all suspects at some point. They were all exonerated, but the case is currently open. It was closed but reopened in 2009. And this anthology series will reunite the original investigators with new experts. At the time, there was a lot of kind of confusion and kind of scandal around all of the contaminated DNA evidence. So I feel like this one could be actually really interesting because if done right or educationally, could teach us all a lot about DNA, perhaps actually catch a killer or kind of lead to a conviction, which would actually be pretty cool of a television show to do, assuming it's done, you know, properly, of course. But that's it. I'm really excited about it. That kind of makes me a creep, but there we go. I don't have a plug, but you can always follow me on Twitter.
I'll give your Twitter handle in just a second. Didn't someone get arrested for this murder? Wasn't that John Mark Carr? Am I remembering it wrong? Sarah?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
And it was the day after Christmas, in case anyone's writing another book.
Oh, okay. Did he get tried? I don't remember anything that happened after he got arrested.
I think he was extradited based on something else.
Oh.
And then, but there was no, like, basically nothing happened.
Got it.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have plugs.
I read it was like a false confession.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to give your plug. So Stephanie covers The Voice, as we already mentioned, on previously.tv, and will be covering Girl Meets World whenever it comes back. And on Twitter, she is at Stephanie Lenore.
Joe.
So during the American Idol finale, there was an ad for the new season of So You Think You Can Dance, and I got so sad I nearly shed a tear. It's I don't know if I've talked about it on this show.
No, how you have not, but please
The show is going on. It was widely assumed that the show would be canceled after its last season due to ratings and sort of the attrition that comes with being a reality show that's been on for 12 seasons or more. But it will be coming back, not in its original form. It'll be coming back as a juniors show, essentially, where young kids will be dancing with the all-stars from Adult So You Think You Can Dance, which is weird enough. And the ad just made it look incredibly awkward and not my thing. And I've been sort of bemoaning this for the last few weeks, sort of going on this kind of funeral tour through Twitter, occasionally just sort of wailing about how sad I am about this. But I will say I do have prestigious backup, because I tweeted about this a couple weeks ago, and none other than Lennon Parham from our beloved Playing House tweeted back at me, and her words were, quote unquote, "I don't want to see 13-year-olds doing the French piece in thigh highs or bang, bang, I shot my lover down. Thank you, Lennon Parham. You are on the right track, and I agree with you." For my plug on Decider.com, I will every day I do a Today in TV History post. They're pretty good. They're sort of digging back into the odd little corners of television. Today, as we record today, for example, the Arrested Development episode, Spring Breakout, which is the one where Lucille first does the winking eye alcohol suggestion face, which if you've ever seen a GIF, you've seen it. It's also the one where she does the drinking contest with Judy Greer. It's a very good episode. So check my stuff out at Decider.com.
Sarah D. Bunting.
The People versus O.J. Simpson concluded last week. This was interesting for me to cover. I really thought it was great. I think I thought it was better even than most people thought. I love John Travolta's performance. This is not to say I thought it was good, just that I loved it. And since I was not here last week, I don't know if you guys were talking about the finale or anything like that.
No, we
but
hadn't watched it.
I felt like it sort of, it was really smart about how it like split up the episodes, what it chose to focus on, and Sarah Paulson for president of acting.
Yeah.
She's the best.
That sad Shapiro bit when everybody was like, "We're going to go on our vacations," and he starts talking about going to like Oscar De La Hoya's house to hit a heavy bag, and everybody was like, "Later, Bob."
I know.
It was so sad. It was great.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And you wonder what kind of direction he was getting, if any.
Yeah.
Or if they were just like, "Well, we'll give him this role because he's kind of that guy."
Yeah. Just keep making that face, John. You're doing great.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It was fantastic. But I was very impressed with it. I think it was just the right length. I think Cuba Gooding Jr. was better than he was given credit for. I'm not sure who else they should have cast. Like, everyone's sure. Like, "He's too short." Like, okay, who else you got?
Yeah.
I think it was really great. I'm very excited to see what they do next time. And I think the only downside is that you are going to see a bunch of stuff like, you know, JonBenet. Like,
sure. Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm also very excited for the ESPN. Yeah. That's like the 5-part look back at it, which I think is probably going to be good. Like 30 for 30 is pretty solid. They generally know what they're doing.
Definitely.
In terms of nonfiction story build over there, and June 17th, 1994 is probably my favorite 30 for 30. It's very well done.
Streaming
but
Netflix.
I think that you really do run into problems when you're outside of like premium or sort of premium minus cable with this stuff. Like the JonBenet subject, I'm excited, but it's on CBS, I'm just like, there's so much shit they're like not even allowed to say. Like, when are they even going to air this? 12:30 at night?
Yeah. Yeah, this well is going to be sucked dry within the next 2 years because there is money, perceived money out there to be made, and everybody wants a piece of it. But
and it's always the anniversary of someone's horrible misfortune.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Speaking of horrible misfortune.
Oh, my God. In plug news, as you may or may not have realized, my In Search of Marathon Diary has now entered season 7, which was this 2002 Mitch Pileggi hosted miscarriage. So it is so terrible. But the latest one has a bunch of vampire tryhards talking about vampirism, which whatever. They're all guys named Kyle who rename themselves a bunch of like names with a lot of V's and K's in them and whatnot, and have the teeny little Gary Oldman glasses from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Wait, I got something for this. Blah?
Thank God for you. Yeah, so you can find that on previously.tv in the in search of section, and just I clipped every single one of them because like they just kept finding people. And there's one guy who's apparently in the military, but he's wearing this dark black, like weird Snow White cosplay wig. And it's like, what exactly do you do for the military? Are you Section 8? Because I don't. Yeah. Anyway, it's hilarious.
I feel sorry for all of you that can't be on Slack when Sarah was IMing me her rage while this was happening.
I just was like, I can't believe this exists. I want to punch these people. And they've probably grown out of it by now because, again, 2002. But yeah, The In Search of Marathon Diary is limping to an embittered close. Please check it out.
Why are women so happy about new Tickle antiperspirant? Is it because Tickle is the first roll-on with a big, wide ball? Oh, is it because Tickle comes in four fresh fragrances? Or is it because Tickle helps keep you dry all day? Make yourself happy. Staying drier is nicer with a little Tickle.
Oh, God.
I was obsessed with those as a kid.
Stephanie
I couldn't wait
Beecham
to start
does
wearing
the best work on voiceover. Oh my God.
Release the trust fund. Oh, gross.
Stepping up to bat, it's number 11, Steven.
The pitcher, a lanky upstart called in from the Illinois Legal Eagles, eyes Steven down, and here's the pitch. It's a foul ball, and oh my, it just hit a lady in the stands. She's down. Oh, this is terrible, Dave.
Lincoln sizes up Steven for the second pitch. Here it is. Broken bat. Look out. Oh no, it's hit another spectator. That guy is really bleeding.
And we have an update on the lady hit by the foul ball. She has been identified as Anna, and she's listed in critical condition.
Oh my. Thank you, Tara. I've just been told the broken bat has indeed killed a man named Ed. This is just awful. What a dark day for baseball.
It is a dark day, but the game must go on, and Honest Abe fires a fireball. Steven connects.
It's a grand slam. What a great day for Steven here on his birthday. As he rounds third, it looks like his friend Lauren is waiting for him with a high five.
Oh my God, what's this? Bigfoot is charging the field. He's yelling about the destruction of his habitat for human recreation. Oh, Dave, he's got Lauren.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, he's ripped Lauren right in half.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what a terrible birthday this turned out to be for Steven.
He's crying to the heavens, cursing the maker and all creation. Looks like Bigfoot is turning slowly to him.
What's he saying?
This is why you stay inside and watch TV. Happy birthday, Steven! All right, everybody, it is time, excuse me, for the canon, and Stephanie is pitching something this week. Take it away, Stephanie.
Okay, so let me start off by explaining that I was homesick for much of last week, which for me means that I ended up rewatching a lot of I Love Lucy. It's one of my chicken soup TV shows that can always make me feel better, just put me in a better mood. So today I bring to the canon Season 2, Episode 4, Job Switching. I chose this episode for a few reasons. It's a really great example of the early slapstick physical comedy that the show is most remembered for, but it also sort of captures the time period it was created in really well because the plot and the overt sexism are so outdated. I always seem to bring to the canon submissions that are probably best watched and not explained. The first time I was here, I bought the Hush episode of Buffy, but hopefully I can do this episode justice with a few clips and explanations. The show starts out with Ricky coming home from work. He sort of forcefully puts down his hat and coat and briefcase and taps his foot. He's already upset with Lucy, as we will hear here.
Lucy?
Is that you, sweetie pie?
Oh, gee, I'm glad you're home. How's about a great big...
I'll see you later.
Lucy? Come in.
What's the matter?
I stop by the bank on the way home, and they show me this.
What's that?
Your check to the beauty parlor.
I write a check to the beauty parlor every month.
Yes, I know that. But they don't always have a little note in the back like this one. Dear teller, be a lamb and don't put this through till next month. Now, what are you going to say for yourself?
That's why they call them tellers. They go around blabbing everything they know.
Lucy? Now, look, I'm serious. I don't know what's the matter with you. Every month, every single month, your bank account is overdrawn. Now, what is the reason?
You don't give me enough money?
So the setup in hindsight is already ridiculous and outdated, but Lucy and Ricky continue to argue anyway, with Lucy answering a lot of yes sirs to Ricky's sort of rhetorical questions about how much money he gives her, until Fred and Ethel sort of invite themselves in. As they do, they try to escape from the argument. They get roped in as well and end up getting a little more than they bargained for, which we will hear now.
Let's face it, Rick. When it comes to money, there are two kinds of people. The earners and the spenders, or as they are more popularly known, husbands and wives.
Yeah, brother, if they had to make their dough, they would think twice before spending it that fast.
Yeah.
What's so tough about earning a living?
Yeah.
Have you ever done it?
No, but I could.
Ha!
I could too.
Listen, holding down a job is a lot more difficult than lying around the house all day long.
Lying around the house? Is that all you think we do?
Yeah.
Well, now, let's be fair, Rick. Every once in a while, they get up and play canasta.
Who do you think does the housework? And who do you think cooks all the meals? Yeah.
Oh, anybody can cook and do the housework.
Ha! I'd just like to see you two try it for a week.
Okay, we will.
We will?
Yeah.
So with the bet made, the next morning, Ricky is seen in the kitchen pulling two plates out of the oven. They look really good. Lucy sits down. She takes a few bites, and she starts to really compliment him on how good the eggs and potatoes and coffee all are. And he sort of shrugs it off and says he's just a natural-born cook. There's then a really cute side gag, actually, where Lucy mimics how Ricky reads the newspaper over breakfast. She opens the paper to block his face, ignores everything he says until he positions the toaster perfectly to shoot a piece of toast over the newspaper, which Lucy then catches and starts to eat all nonchalantly. The phone rings and Lucy answers, has her conversation, hangs up, and then Ricky gets a little curious about the call, which we will hear.
Who was that on the phone?
It was the drugstore. You left your hat down there when you picked up these two breakfast orders. You know, you could have tried to cook this yourself. We have a dozen eggs in the refrigerator.
Well, they didn't turn out quite right.
The whole dozen?
So Rick is already cheating, but before Lucy can really admonish him any further, Ethel shows up. Fred's right behind her, and there's a really cute sight gag of him in a frilly apron. It's cute in the way that kind of, you know, grumpy old men are kind of always cute when they're made to, like, go to a tea party or something. Ethel and Lucy then head off to an employment agency, but they quickly realize that verbal shenanigans are really their only skill set, which we will hear now.
What kind of jobs do you have open?
Well, what do you do?
What kind of jobs do you have open?
Well, what do you do?
What kind of jobs do you have open?
You go first this time.
All right, what do you do?
What kind of jobs you... No!
So once that sort of who's on first argument finishes playing out, they go down a list of possible jobs, with Lucy and Ethel reacting visibly to titles like dental hygienist and bookkeeper, as though they would be the worst things in the world to be. Lucy does attempt to say she's a stenographer by answering the question, how fast can you type, by moving her fingers rapidly up and down and mimicking as though she's sitting at an imaginary typewriter and saying, oh, about that fast. Eventually, though, they do settle on working in a candy factory, which sounds reasonable. And the episode begins to trade off on how terribly Ethel and Lucy are doing versus how terribly Fred and Ricky are doing. Left at home, Ricky and Fred are overstarching and scorching the ironing. For some reason, they're trying to iron silk stockings. While this part is outdated and over my head completely, it plays really well visually still because, as Ricky argues that stockings don't need to be ironed if they're starched, he pulls out what looks like a 3D model of a leg, which is actually supposed to be one of the stockings, which should not be that, like, large. And it's all hardened because he made them so stiff with so much starch. But then he has an idea, which we will listen to.
Oh, you know something? I've been thinking about that dinner, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's silly for both of us to cook, each one of us to cook a whole meal, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought what we should do is pool our talents. And I'll cook the main course and you cook the dessert.
Okay.
Now, let's see. How about arroz con pollo?
Well, which is that, the main course or the dessert?
Chicken and rice.
Oh!
I seen my mother do it 100 times.
I love it.
Well, listen, I tell you what. Can you bake a cake for dessert?
Well, will I? A big, juicy one, 7 layers thick.
Yeah? With frosting?
Globs of frosting.
Oh, boy. This is going to be the best meal our wives ever had.
So with that setup, which sounds reasonable, the show checks in on Lucy and Ethel at the chocolate factory, where for a minute it does look like everything is actually going okay, which we'll hear.
All right, girls, this is the first stop. Now, you understand from your indoctrination session, you're here for one purpose, to work.
Yes, ma'am.
Ricardo, I'm going to put you to work chocolate dipping. You say you've had experience.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm a dipper from way back.
Yes?
They used to call me the Big Dipper.
I just love that it's blatantly called an indoctrination session. Of course, as soon as the four women leaves, everything does not go well. Lucy sits down to mimic the candy dipper next to her, but instead of neatly using one hand to roll the candy and one hand to dip the candy into the chocolate, she uses both of her hands for both of those things, losing the candy into the chocolate, dropping it on the floor, picking it up, sort of making chocolate piles, which she tries to line up next to the other candy dippers, neat little chocolates in a row. This other woman is completely silent as Lucy sorts of pleads for help. She has an itchy nose, but the woman ends up slapping Lucy as she chases a fly around the room, and they end up getting into a chocolate fight. From there, we cut back to check in on Fred and Ricky, and they're so confident in Ricky's ability to balance a newspaper on top of a vacuum cleaner that he's claiming the only reason women say housework is so hard is because they don't use their heads, which is very charming indeed. Fred then shows Ricky his supposedly 7-layer cake, but it's basically as thin as a brownie, because Fred mixed in all the frosting and cake mix at the same time and baked it. I'm not really sure how that would work, but oh well. And then we find out how Ricky's dinner is actually going, which we'll hear now.
Hey, listen, by the way, what do you know about rice?
Well, I had it thrown at me on one of the darkest days of my life.
No, never mind that. I mean, how much do you think we should use for 4 people?
Well, I don't know. People like that stuff.
Well, how about, 1 pound per person, some?
That sounds about right.
Well, that's good, because that's what I put in. 4 pounds.
Good, that's good.
Well, let me see. I got the chickens cooking in the pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Now, how long do you think they should take?
Oh, I don't know. I'd say about an hour and a half.
What was that?
Hurry up!
Wait a minute!
What was that noise? Don't burn yourself!
Hey, what happened to my chickens? I had 2 chickens in there.
Well, they gotta be here.
Chick, 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 chick.
Hey,
what happened?
Are those your birds up there?
It's obviously a disaster. The pressure cooker has exploded, and the force of the explosion has sent the chickens onto the ceiling. Once they begin to fall down, Fred and Ricky try to wash them with dish soap, which must be delicious. But then the rice at the same time starts to hilariously overflow its pot as though it's Mount Vesuvius, basically taking over the entire kitchen. Ricky tries to catch it all in bowls, while Fred tries to catch it in a small spice jar, which he actually succeeds in neatly scooping the rice into the jar, but then he has to keep emptying it into the sink and then going back and forth and back and forth, and there's no real end in sight. But at this point, it doesn't matter because Lucy and Ethel aren't doing any better. They have kind of struck out at the factory. They're receiving their final warning from the factory foreman, which we'll hear now.
All right, girls. Now, this is your last chance. If one piece of candy gets past you and into the packing room unwrapped, you're fired.
Yes, ma'am.
Let her roll!
This leads to the famous scene with Lucy and Ethel desperately trying to keep up with the pace of the conveyor belt as the chocolate kind of rolls down and they need to wrap it. At first, they're doing just fine, but as the conveyor belt speeds up, they begin to fail miserably and they shove all the extra candy aside into their mouths, down their shirts, into their hats, kind of doing whatever it can to make sure that at least all of the unwrapped pieces are kept from going into the next room, but they are not successful by any means. Defeated from there, they return home, find Ricky and Fred missing, find the mess in the kitchen, and are just about to collapse from exhaustion when their husbands return, as we'll hear.
Listen, we don't know how you girls feel about it, but we like to forget the whole thing. We're lousy housewives.
Hideous.
Well, we're not so good at bringing home the bacon either. We got fired off our first job. Oh. Yeah.
Well, look, what say we go back to the way we were? Huh? We'll make the money and you spend it.
Oh, that's great with me. Oh, yeah.
And listen, girls, we never realized how tough it was to run a house before. So just to show you our appreciation, we brought you a little present.
Really?
I did.
For each one of you, a 5-pound box of chocolate.
So from there, Ethel and Lucy collapse onto the couch, and that with a shout out to Ava Allman, who plays the forewoman and also the librarian, Breakfast at Tiffany's, and pops up in the Lucy and Desi Comedy Hour every once in a while, who's one of kind of my favorite bit players. That is my humble canon submission.
All right. Shall I start?
Yes, please do.
All right. I'm very torn about this because it is clear that this is, you know, a seminal episode of sitcom television. That scene is iconic for a reason, in the candy factory. But at the same time, oh, and I also should say, even though I usually, when I think of Lucille Ball, I think of her as like, as being very big, which mostly she is in this episode too, like overplaying everything. She has some subtle moments too. The toast one that you mentioned is one. And then, in the first clip that we heard when Ricky comes home and she's mad and she just goes, sees his face and then goes, see you later. Like it feels very modern in how little she's giving to that line. But the rest of it, I mean, you know, you sort of touch on the sexism and I know that it's period appropriate, but it's still not pleasant to watch. And I, you know, I know that this is like probably the first instance of what's become a sitcom trope, which is the let's trade jobs for a day and see who has a harder life thing, which is now like such a thing that every show does it. New Girl did it like 3 episodes ago. I'm really having a hard time, you know, reconciling how important I know this episode is in terms of television history versus how not fun it was to watch.
Can I go next? I'll just put you out of your misery.
Go ahead.
I did not like this episode for all the reasons you just said, because it's, you know, although it is of its time, I'm still watching it today. And I feel like I had an echo of the same reaction I have when I watch Married with Children, which is different because that is deliberate, where this is just a product of its time. But still, I'm watching it in 2016. I also, for I Love Lucy, was also the show that was on before I wanted to get to a good show when I was a kid. You know, like you come home from school.
Mine too. And it's the show was not good. The show was The Brady Bunch, but still.
Gilligan's Island or whatever that, you know, 60s, 50s rock block was on your on your local independent station. But although this is a famous episode and is like something you would put in a textbook, I just really can't get over, you know, the the gender role conformity stuff and, you know, tough luck for Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz that they are, you know, not going to get this vote from me because they did this way back when all this shit was, you know, acceptable. But dead the brakes. So, you know, like teach us in class. But for me, you know, I just didn't care for it. Who wants to go next? Sarah, why don't you go next?
I am having the same struggle. Like the sexism is in that opening sequence when he's mad about the check, like he's kind of like getting in her space and she's backing away in this like to the moon kind of way that
There's a Simpsons scene where they're watching, you know, an episode of I Love Lucy, and it's just trying to go, oh, you hit her pretty hard there, Rick.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's one step away from that at times. It's like weirdly foreboding.
I don't think we were supposed to notice that. I think that was just like how you would play that scene in 1950, whatever. I could sort of get around the rest of it, but that was sort of it's sort of, if you don't have the sound on, it's fun to look at like the 50s fashions. And like, of course, the employment agency guy's name is Snodgrass.
Yeah.
Like such a 50s like name for a uptight authority figure. Although I guess everyone was that because it was the 50s.
I thought that guy looked like one lab coat away from being the professor from Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But it's, I have the same question, which is like, is it canon because it's literally the most famous bit in sitcom history? Or is it not canon because now we've all seen that shit a million times on all these like, you know, cavalcade of sitcom history shows, or like we've seen at the Oscars or every time an Arnaz dies. I don't know if there's any left. Sorry, Arnazes. it's like, I get it, but I also feel like it's our canon and we don't, like, if we don't want to put stuff like this or the Honeymooners in there, we don't have to. And I'm probably going to vote no. And the reason for me is that, like, it's a sitcom and it's like, you all know how I feel about them generally and why. And this kind of thing is why.
Yeah.
Like, end the scene sooner. Like, there were a few bits in there that I enjoyed. I liked some of Lucy's smaller timing, like Tara said. I really liked the toast thing. That was very charming. It did take a while to, like, get to the fireworks candy factory.
Yeah, that's
And that
thing.
Scene, like, is actually surprisingly short.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the episode seemed to take kind of a long time. And like Tara said, it was not that enjoyable. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
I feel like comedy doesn't age as well as drama, and that's why it's like it's a pacing issue where everything just feels like very slow. Like you like they're sort of hand holding the audience through every beat, like, get it? Get how this is funny? Like, yes, we get it. But then, you know, they didn't get it at the time. We get it, as Sarah said, because we've seen sitcoms for our entire lives.
Oh, stupid idiots.
Joe.
I do feel like it's interesting. I feel like comedy does age in one direction, right? Where it's so tough to go back. It almost feels like there's this like collective unconscious thing we have as far as things like timing and bits and premises, where it's so hard for us to go back and find things funny that we've sort of evolved past. And I saw semi-recently the I Love Lucy episode with the Vitamita Vegemin, which I actually really liked, but it was another thing where like you forget how much of that episode is not that, and like how long it takes to sort of get to that part. And it's, and it was not a deal back then. And now I, you know, just sort of like hopping in my chair, just, when are they going to get to it? When is she going to start drinking the tonic. This episode, though, I did find pretty funny. I think almost entirely due to Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance together. I think Ethel is a character who sort of like kind of like built to be underrated because the show's called I Love Lucy and Lucille Ball is who she is. But I thought their scenes together, they kind of, you know, ratchet up each other's sort of levels, and in a way that I found really funny. I thought the payoff with the conveyor belt's really good. I thought for as many times as we see that in clips, you never see the other one, the one where she's doing the chocolate tipping opposite the lady, which I thought might have been funnier if only because I hadn't seen it before, and just sort of the stoicness of the other woman and the workmanlike way she's just like, I was so fascinated by the way she was actually like working that chocolate and doing it right. And watching Lucy sort of like copy her, but only in terms of like her frantic arm movements, was really kind of smart and funny in a way. And I appreciate the way that sitcoms used to be able to just sort of throw reality out the window and have like the bottomless pit of rice sort of bubble its way out of the boiler in that way. I think you guys are right about the sexist premises of the show. And like, on one level, it was what, you know, the times were, but the times were that because of things like this. You know what I mean? The times, existed that way because people, you know, wrote things like this and sort of, you know, devised premises like this and bought into gender roles in the way that they did. So it's, you don't necessarily have to write a pass for the show. I think I'm choosing to compartmentalize it, if only because I do find the stuff with Lucy and Ethel really funny, and it really did make me laugh. So that's where I come out on it.
All right. So it's time for the vote, Tara.
I vote nay, but thank you, Stephanie.
I also vote nay. Sarah.
Very well presented, and I would happily look at a lesser known Lucy episode, but yeah, I can't do it. It's a no for me.
And Joe?
My Guam vote is a yes.
I'm sorry. Oops, I did the wrong one. Here we go. I Love Lucy. Season 2. Episode 4, Job Switching. I'm sorry, but you're not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
I think she got it, Dave.
Jeez. Americans love a winner. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope. It's time for a winner and a loser leak. Sorry, sometimes I forget the way things are done. Tara, you have a winner?
Yeah, the winners are Joe and me and other fans of the former ABC Family, now Freeform show Greek, because they are doing a reunion movie and I can't wait. Very excited. That was a very underrated dramedy when it was on, and it's going to be fun to see what those characters have been doing since we saw them last a few years ago.
Loser of the week?
Martin Sheen and me. Because Martin Sheen is not only executive producing and I think narrating the O.J. is Innocent docuseries, but now he's in like a little cat fight in the press with Marcia Clark, who she's like, I think I know what he's presenting, and no. And Martin Sheen's like, you don't know what we're presenting. Like, dude, don't help.
I love that in the same week that like Martin Sheen does that, Bill Clinton comes out and like wags a finger at Black Lives Matter. And it's just like our two most embarrassing presidents after the fact, like, God damn it.
And Nicolas Cage got into a fight with a guy from Motley Crue. What's happening to our society? And an Indigo suit, no less. So, I mean, I don't know what the fuck's happening anymore. So this all brings up an interesting question about how the society's falling apart. Oh, and that is this.
Yes.
Do you know what time it is?
Time to get a bunker?
Close. It's game time. And by game time, I mean it's time to start hunting game because society's falling apart.
Okay.
All right, everybody. This is the sixth game time of the season. We're back onto a regulation game. The current standings are Joe 3, Tara 2, with Sarah and Value Guests looking for their first points today. Speaking of today, we are playing 2 for the price of 1 from Rob Loveboat Harmon.
Yay!
Who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Rob notes, actors are expensive and we need to cut costs. You need to hire one actor who can cover 2 parts. Players are giving clues to actor mashups like Dorothy Zbornak. Thank you. Is also one of the doctor's companions. The answer here, and this is a hard one. This is why we're using an example, because he didn't want to use it in the game. The answer is B. Arthur Darvill. All right. So we're just slamming the words together. Note to players, the shared name in the mashup might be spelled differently in each name. For instance, Stuart with a W and Stuart with a U. Lee, all those kind of examples.
Sure.
We have 52 questions for you today. Okay. 1 point per question, no hints.
Okay.
Any questions?
No.
Let's throw it to Piggy.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, here is our order. Sarah, Joe, Stephanie, Tara. Are we ready to play 2 for the price of 1?
Sure are.
Sarah.
Yes and yes.
He's the King of Queens and Capeside.
Oh, he's the King of Queens and Capeside. And his name is... I don't remember his name.
Oh, no.
It.
Who's the king of capes?
I don't remember his name. I don't know.
Tara, anybody?
Kevin James Vanderbeek.
Kevin James Vanderbeek is your answer. All right, Joe. Agent John Doggett also commands the Enterprise.
John Doggett. Robert Patrick Stewart.
That is good for 1 point. Stephanie. It's Agent Coulson's New Year's Rockin' Eve. It's Agent Coulson's New Year's Rockin' Eve.
Oh, God. Clark. It's on the tip of my tongue.
That's misleading because it's flipped.
I didn't say they're going to be in the right order.
Oh, okay.
Dick Clark Gregg.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
She'll disappear from the West Wing, but she'll win American Idol. She'll disappear from the West Wing, but she'll win American Idol.
Who disappeared from the West Wing? It's Mandy, but what is her name in real life? I don't know.
Maura Kelly Clarkson was your answer.
No.
All right, back to Sarah. Dwight Schrute is also Angela Chase's friend, Ricky Vasquez.
Dwight Schrute. Oh, my God. Rain Wilson. Oh, God. Rain Wilson. What is Wilson's last name? It's not Rain Wilson.
Rain Wilson Cruz.
Damn it.
All right, Joe. The gay guy from Soap is also a southern accented blonde on Wings.
Wow. Nice. The Wayback Machine. Billy Crystal Bernard.
That's good for a point. To Stephanie. WNYX's Matthew Brock also marries Mary Tyler Moore and trips over an ottoman.
Oh, man. I might have seen one episode of that first show. Mary Tyler Moore over an ottoman? I have no idea.
Anybody?
Andy Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke, correct. All right, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Is TV married to Helen Hunt and also has charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent?
Wow.
RuPaul Reiser.
That is amazing.
What kind of alchemy could possibly result?
Picturing it and loving it.
Sarah. Weeds' Andy Botwin is also Growing Pains' Mike Siever, who sadly hasn't been left behind.
Justin Kirk Cameron.
Nice.
Joe.
This is a line from that play that we saw.
The Winchester brothers' dad is also Chandler Bing's mom.
One more time.
The Winchester brothers' dad is also Chandler Bing's mom.
Chandler Bing's mom is Morgan Fairchild. Oh, Jeffrey Dean Morgan Fairchild.
Correct.
Your favorite.
A lot of teeth.
Jeepers.
All right, Stephanie. When Cousin Rose arrives at Downton, it turns out she's also a mafia don.
Okay, so Cousin Rose is Lily, mafia Don, Rose, what is her last name? Rose.
TV Mafia
the actor,
Don.
Not the character.
I know. Rose James Gandolfini.
Correct.
It's Lily James Gandolfini.
Oh, she said Lily.
She did. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm gonna...
It's okay. You said Lily before.
Yeah. Tara.
Yeah.
She dominates the Glee Club and also moves in with Grams in Capeside and dies.
Leah Michelle Williams.
Wow.
Sarah, besides starring in self-titled sitcom where he's sometimes Shanae, is that right? Shanae.
Yeah.
He will also be the conductor of the whitest white bread music show.
As I am also the whitest of the white bread, I'm pleased to tell you that this is Martin Lawrence Welk.
Nice.
Terrifying. Yeah.
The voice of Archer's Lana Kane is also a Teen Wolf.
Oh, Aisha Tyler Posey.
All right, Stephanie. The Tonight Show host also has a queer eye.
Johnny Carson Kressley?
Correct, well for 1 point. All right, bring us into our first score break. Tara, uh-huh. In Beverly Hills, Steve's girlfriend, Celeste, also plays Kelly Taylor's love interest who moves into Melrose Place.
Jennifer Grant Show.
Wow.
Wow.
Correct. Whoa, all right. Whoa. That's our first score break. Let's hear the scores.
This is a very close game. Sarah and Stephanie are tied with 2 each. I have 3. Joe has 4.
All right. Back into it. Sarah D. Bunting. The Jeffersons' British neighbor is also a brilliant detective living at 221B Baker Street.
Oh, my God. I guess I'm just going to have to guess some British first name, right? Nigel Simon. Let's go with Simon. Simon Benedict Cumberbatch.
Paul. Paul Benedict Cumberbatch.
I was like, if this is Colin, I'm going to kill myself.
That was 17.
Oh, the Spread Eagle?
Spread Eagle.
For Joe, the Brady Bunch dad also works in in Baltimore as a homicide detective.
Oh, Robert Reed Diamond.
Correct. Stephanie, that strict dance teacher from Fame is also a political strategist in Chicago.
Political strategist in Chicago.
Sure. Would watch.
Yes. The dance teacher in...
Debbie
yeah,
Allen
right.
Cumming. Debbie Allen Cumming. That's Good Wife.
Yep.
Trying to place. Yep.
Tara. Musical.
Yep.
Sells weed in a grass stick, gives Kirstie Allen the big one.
Mary Louise Parker Stevenson.
Wow.
Nice reference, by
gross.
The way.
Gross.
So gross.
Sarah. Ryan on the OC is also Bonnie Franklin's drug-addicted daughter.
Oh, Jesus. Ben McKenzie Phillips.
Joe, Richie Cunningham is also DJ Johnny Fever.
Oh, Ron Howard Hessman.
Correct. Stephanie, Rebecca Howe is also the profiler.
Who?
The profiler.
I have no idea.
Exactly.
Kirstie Alley Walker. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Don't miss her.
Nate Fisher's annoying murdered wife also goes to a woman's prison.
Lily Taylor Schilling.
Nice.
For Sarah, Lorelai Gilmore also hosts a cheeky British chat show.
Lauren Graham Norton?
Yeah. Joe, Liz Lemon is also a morally corrupt friend of the Beverly Hills Housewives.
Tina Fey Resnick.
Wow.
Nice. Tina Fey Resnick.
You are
Woodwatch.
A bad man.
For Stephanie, Kirk's love interest on Glee also works in the Parks and Recreation Department.
Darren Chris. Oh, God, which Chris is it? Chris Pratt. Darren Chris
Yay.
Pratt.
Correct.
Nice.
There are too many Chris's.
Tara.
Yes.
There are many.
Blossom's dumb brother is also the granddad on Blackish.
Joey Lawrence Fishburne. Again, Woodwatch.
Wow. Woodwatch.
Sarah D. Bunting. John Boy Walton also works as a mechanic at a Nantucket airline.
As a mechanic? Oh,
yep.
God. What was that guy's goddamn name?
Anybody?
Yeah, Richard.
The name you're searching
Henry
for is
Thomas?
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, Richard Thomas Hayden.
Oh.
Richard Thomas, not Henry Thomas.
Fucking Ned.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Jerry Seinfeld's pal is also a Viking vampire.
Oh, dear. Okay. a Viking vampire? Both of those things at once?
Apparently.
Yes. Okay. Jason Alexander Ludwig?
Anybody?
Skarsgård. Skarsgård, no?
Oh, yeah. Oh, right, Doy.
In Sarah's opinion, the lesser Skarsgård.
Poor you know Stephanie.
You know how I do.
I do.
Is hung and also hosts Hollywood Game Night.
Ooh.
That's pretty good. Pretty good pairing there, buddy.
Would probably watch.
Is hung and also hosts Hollywood Game Night.
William Hung? No, Jane Lynch is still hosting Hollywood Game Night, right? Who's okay, so Hung must be the actor from Hung who's I don't know.
Thomas Jane Lynch.
William Hung, that's I really wish that had gone somewhere. God
bring
bless.
Us into our second score break for Tara. Mm-hmm. He's almost playing himself on 30 Rock and also Easy Reader from The Electric Company.
Oh, Tracy Morgan Freeman.
Tracy Morgan Freeman is correct. All right, let's hear the scores.
Oh boy, it's even closer. Stephanie has 3, Sarah has 4, Joe and I are tied with 7 each.
All right, that was question 32.
Oh boy.
For Sarah, here's 33. House's buddy goes in search of mysterious things.
House's buddy goes in search of mysterious things.
Yep,
buddy.
I know you know the last part.
Do I?
I would hope so. You've been marathoning.
Well, yeah, except I don't. I don't know which friend you could be talking about.
Robert Sean Leonard Nimoy is the answer.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, Joe, 7 of 9 is also Jason Stackhouse.
Jerry Ryan Quanten.
You are correct,
wow.
Sir.
Wow. Nice pull.
Stephanie, Detective Ed Green is also John Watson.
Ed Green was, that dude. Okay, Jesse Martin. And what's the last part?
John Watson.
Who's John Watson? Ed Green. Yeah.
He'll be the only one getting murdered.
Jesse L. Martin Freeman. Martin Freeman from Sherlock.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
His name is Earl, the $6 million man.
Jason Lee Majors.
Jason Lee Majors. All right, Sarah. From SNL to hosting the Oscars, he's also McMillan of McMillan and Wife.
What? Oh, Chris. Why would I get this and then I don't get the MSCL one? I don't know. I apologize to the world. But this is Chris Rock Hudson.
Wow.
And Food Watch.
Joe, he's mad, bad, and dangerous to know and sings on his 70s Christmas specials.
Oh God. Luke Perry Como? God.
Yep. We're a billion years old.
Not enough question marks on that, by the way, yeah, in your right. voice.
All right, Stephanie, here's a chance to redeem yourself from the last question. There's a hint. That's a hint. Archer is also Detective Ray Curtis.
Oh, that's not happening.
Okay. That was another Law & Order part question. Oh. That's H. John Benjamin from Archer, Benjamin Bratt from Law & Order, Archer, Law & Order, H. John Benjamin Bratt.
On Archer.
He curbs his enthusiasm for UFOs.
For UFO. Oh, Larry David Duchovny.
History's greatest
acting robot.
He's pretty good. Sarah.
Yep.
He can't announce the correct Miss Universe winner, but he can be one of Carol Burnett's comedy regulars.
Oh, boy. I'm glad I get to redeem myself in the eyes of the Corman estate. This is Steve Harvey Corman.
You are correct.
Whee.
Joe, Eric Foreman from The 70s Show is also Cylon number 8.
I always get the Grace Park ones. I don't know why. Topher Grace Park.
You are correct.
Whee.
Stephanie,
He works in Pawnee, Indiana, and also in Oahu.
Oh, God, I wish I watched Hawaii Five-O.
You don't. Sure don't.
Anybody?
Yeah. No, I don't even know what it is.
Adam Scott Kahn.
Oh, of course.
Bring us into our penultimate score break. This is question 44 of 52 for Tara.
Yeah.
Gotham's Oswald Cobblepot is also on The Vampire Diaries and engaged to Lady Gaga.
Robin Lord Taylor Kinney? Oh my God.
Damn.
Wow. Nice.
Sarah.
That is excellent.
Felicity.
Thanks, oh, no, you didn't.
Felicity is also a British werewolf with sticky out ears.
Felicity is also a British werewolf.
With sticky out ears.
Harry Russell. I'm really resisting saying Crow.
Harry Russell Tovey.
I don't know who that is.
I'm guessing it's being human. Yeah. Joe, this cooking show host everybody loves.
Rachel Ray Romano.
Correct.
But Stephanie. Watch.
Edith Prickly is also elected president.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't even know what show Edith Prickly's on.
All right. Anybody?
Joe.
No. Well, no. I don't know Edith Prickly though.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
Andrea Martin.
Oh.
Oh dear.
All right, Tara. Annie on Community is also Toni Collette's daughter and has a different reoccurring role on Community and has an Oscar.
Jesus. Allison Brie Larson.
You are correct. All right, here comes everybody's last question, so let's quickly get the scores.
Okay. Stephanie has 3, Sarah has 6, Joe and I are still tied now with 11 apiece.
Oh boy. All
done.
Right. So, Sarah, don't make Joan Watson angry, or she'll turn green and hulk out.
What?
I just got it.
Oh, Jesus. Thus the spelling advisory. And I would watch this too. Lucy Liu Ferrigno.
Yep.
Great Halloween costume idea for anybody.
Oh my
anybody.
God, yep. It so is.
That would be good. All right, Joe. Put yourself ahead. A Baywatch babe is also a news anchor who hosted The Mole.
Pamela Anderson Cooper.
All right, puts the pressure on Tara.
But
first, for Stephanie, that girl is also married to Dharma.
God. That girl was
And as a criminal.
That girl was Marlo Thomas, and then say the last part.
That girl is also married to Dharma.
Oh, God, nope. Marlo, yeah.
The most generic name.
Gibson. Marlo Thomas Gibson. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
To tie it up.
Okay.
Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a chirpy morning show co-host. Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a chirpy morning show.
Oh, shit. DeForest Kelly Ripa.
All right. Wow. That means it is a
tie. I was like, whose last name is Hoda?
All right. So, Stephanie, Sarah, take a break. This tiebreaker is between Joe and Tara, and it's a doozy. First person to correctly give me the whole answer.
Oh, no.
You might want to start writing these things down, because it's a big one.
Okay.
It might take a little while.
Okay.
And I'm just going to let you keep on shouting out answers because it's pretty complex.
Okay.
Here we go. The tiebreaker.
Yep.
I'm in a budget crisis, guys. Okay. I need 5 actors for the price of 1.
Shit. Oh, shit.
This actor needs to play Paul from Orphan Black, fight the Evil Dead, be a German millionaire in the Hamptons, be one of a party of five, and be a news anchor. And I'm probably going to edit this for time, because it's going to take him a little time to figure this out.
I already don't remember the Paul's name.
That's why I told you to write it down.
No, I know.
Oh, the actor.
Yeah, I think I'm out because I can't pull it. Joe?
Wait.
I know he's a soap guy.
Play Paul from Orphan Black, fight the evil dead, be a German millionaire in the Hamptons, be one of a party of five, and be a news anchor. Joe, do you want to give that a shot?
Sure. I can't. All right.
I got the last.
I know the last four, I think.
Me too.
All right. Hang on. Okay. Hands on the buzzer.
All right.
I'm taking away Paul from Orphan Black. Go.
Okay. Say the next
Bruce
thing.
Bruce Campbell, then. Scott Wolf Blitzer?
Yeah.
Correct.
Nice.
Good All job. Right.
Play Paul from Orphan Black, Dylan Bruce.
Dylan Bruce.
Fight the evil dead, Dylan Bruce Campbell. Be a German millionaire in the Hamptons, Dylan Bruce Campbell Scott. One of a party of five, Dylan Bruce Campbell Scott Wolf. News anchor, Dylan Bruce Campbell Scott Wolf Blitzer.
Damn, congratulations, Joe. Joe. Amazing.
That was well done. All right, everybody, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We sang a few bars for the end of American Idol's 15 season run, while Liv said random things about Face Off before we went around the dial with stops at Togetherness, JonBenet, So You Think You Could Dance, The People versus O.J. Simpson, and Tickle, hee-hee. Stephanie unwrapped the classic I Love Lucy episode, Job Switching for the Canon, but we didn't eat it up like so many little chocolate bonbons. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Joe was the winner of this week's Combo Game Time to Remember.
We're listening.
I get it.
I think you did there.
I am David Tickle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
a moment like this,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Wilson Cruz, I'm really sorry I confused you with the Nationals catcher,
Joe Reed,
Tara literally stole what I was going to say,
and Stephanie Cangro.
I got goosies, baby.
No.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
This show reached historic heights because you participated in its success. We reach our full potential when every American participates.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.